Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Podcast. This is 1047B. The B's are always guests, and we have a sensational guest for you today. Dr. Randall Bell is also known as the Doctor of Disaster. I don't know if that's a great name to be called, but he has exhibited a whole bunch of disasters and helped people recover from them. And I've got to tell you, his book, Post-Traumatic Thriving, The Art, Science, and Stories of Resilience, is brilliantly written, fun to read, and even has, I guess, what you would call mysteries in it. So as you follow the cases through, you wonder, how will they come out? How will this person get through denial and into the next stage? And to me, that was part of the fun of getting to read this book. But there are really inspiring stories of people who turned pain into purpose. And of course, the basic question is, when you have this event, when you have a very traumatic event, what makes the difference? Is it your genetics? Is it a history? Or is there something that you can take that is learned? And I guess let's ask Dr. Bell. By the way, I think Dr. Bell lives in Los Angeles, and I was going to ask him, how close does he live to the Susan who had the landslide destroy her home alone? Dr. Bell, thanks very much. And by the way, the website for this sensational book is Dr. Bell, drbell.com. Pretty easy to get, as well as it's, of course, on Amazon. Dr. Bell, thanks very much.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Roizen. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Tell me, so how did you first get into the field of being a master of disaster? And secondly, how different is this from recovery from a death or some other event like that?
Well, sure. To start with how I got into it, I started as an economist decades ago, and I started specializing in disasters. And I started working on, I did the World Trade Center, I did Flight 93 crash site, I worked on the O.J. Simpson and JonBenet Ramsey cases, I've worked on hundreds of these cases as an economist. And then I started meeting the people behind the statistics, because I had kind of a unique access to the whole situation. And I found the people behind the tragedies far more interesting than the numbers. So I went back to school, earned my PhD in sociology, and really started documenting the stories. And what I learned is that by college age, 66 to 85% of everybody has been hit by a trauma, whether it's just the death that you mentioned, or divorce, or disease. They all seem to start with a D, but the difficult D's that come along and hit us, we have a lot of trauma, but we never learned in school how to deal with it. So I kind of, 10 years ago, started doing the research to come up with this book and really figure it out.
And with that type of, so you came in with, I assume, an economist trying to help people understand what the economic loss was and how to regain that, meaning you testified for them about that economic loss and got into the field that way. The next component that I wanted to ask is, so this story is written in a very intriguing way, or what I would call this, our stories are written. So, for example, in the denial, and I don't know, yeah, it's our stories of denial. My favorite was Susan. From a standpoint of favorite, meaning she and her husband had what I would call very different responses. She went and I'll let you tell the story rather, but her husband, I can imagine myself, since the power was still on at their destroyed home, He turned on the TV and watched a TV show when he got home 4 hours afterwards. I could imagine doing something like that myself, is trying to calm myself down before starting to try and recover. So what are the different responses, and how close do you live to where that, I guess, mudslide caused by man-made events happen?
Yeah, I live pretty close by in L.A. Southern California is riddled with landslides, and Susan is a very successful television producer, and her husband is in the movie business, and they had a life of luxury, and Susan came home one day, and her house was literally cracked open like an egg, and there goes their life of luxury, and Susan, you know, they both went into shock, but they displayed it in different ways. Susan was frantic and hysterical, but her husband Peter came over, and it was so overwhelming for him that his shock led him to just lay down on the couch and watch TV, even though there was mud 3 feet high in the living room. So everyone kind of reacts initially to shock differently. You know, shock, denial, anger, bargaining, depression. Most people kind of land on depression. These are all healthy emotions, as long as we don't hurt someone or hurt ourselves. But it's part of the kind of what I call the dive stage of trauma, where we just get hammered, our whole lives are destroyed.
So you go in and you talk about that as the victim cycle as opposed to the bully cycle. And what percent of people go into, and we ought to have you describe the victim cycle versus the bully cycle, what percent of people go into the victim cycle as opposed to the bully cycle? So we're going to come up back to the O. Henry ending on what caused this for Susan, this mudslide. But before we do, how do people, in other words, what's the difference between the victim cycle and the bully cycle? And by the way, I'm asking you that question, but you describe it incredibly brilliantly in the book, so I don't want to take away. These questions are answered. I'm just bringing them out for the audience, if you will, on the podcast.
Sure. Yeah, great question. Let's take a step back. What leads people into the bullying cycle or the victim cycle is that they've been traumatized. You've heard the phrase, of course, hurt people hurt people. So some people that have been traumatized, they turn into bullies. They get their kicks off, you know, picking on other people. Other people become victims, and they kind of unnecessarily take in an unhealthy way. They take on a victim role where they just become targets for the bullies. I would say, I don't know that there's an academic study that puts a percentage on it, but from observations, I think the majority are victims. Bullies are, a minority, but they're obviously, a big problem. But the idea is whether you take the victim role or the bullying role, the idea is to really address the core issues of the trauma so you can heal and move past that toxic behavior.
And what is the difference between this and a death? In other words, it seems to me that the cycle, and I don't know whether it's just a smaller tragedy, but when I think about the denial and the bargaining and the et cetera stages that Kubler-Ross had with death, this seems very similar to that. What am I missing, or is it the same? Is a death another form of trauma, and you can thrive after that as well?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say, the death of a loved one is often very traumatic. So it's part of the population of traumas, if you will. You may be traumatized by that, or by a divorce, or by a disease, or by an accident. And death is one of many things that can be very, very traumatizing.
And then the next stage, let's go through Susan, if you will. So Susan and her husband, it's actually interesting. Susan is so prominent that I have forgotten the name of her husband. But in any case, what happened with, just to give the example, and I don't want to give away the whole book, obviously, but what happened to Susan after this? So she found out what about the cause of this?
Well, it turned out that the landslide was caused by the city of LA. They had misgraded a fire break in the hillside, and that resulted in the landslide. But rather than the city of LA, you know, stepping up and taking care of everything, there was a long courtroom battle. They were blaming them, and they had nothing to do with it. And this went back and forth. It was very expensive. It was very depressing. And Susan told me herself that, you know, she went into a state of depression, and that's, again, very normal. You just don't want to get stuck there, of course. You know, after 2 or 3 months, you need to seek outside help. And that's exactly what Susan did. She went from the dive stage into the survive stage, where she kind of got back on her feet. She confronted the city of L.A. She sorted things out and untangled things and started looking for solutions. Ultimately, she won the battle, but it was a tough battle. But she did survive, and she got back on her feet. What made Susan unique is that she didn't settle on just survival. She went into thriving, and today she has a spectacular life, which we can talk about. But that's the basic process: dive, survive, and thrive. And she went through that cycle.
Now, how many people end up divorced or having because of the way they react to it, a interpersonal relationship that breaks apart at that time?
You know, again, I don't know the academic statistics on that, but, you know, traumas are very disabilitating, and a lot of people do break up and divorce and so forth. It may be that there's kind of latent problems that went unaddressed, and the trauma kind of wakes you up to facing things and leaving. But trauma doesn't necessarily have to result in that. Trauma can really, you can tap into the energy of the trauma. It can bring people closer together than ever before. And I really focus again on the thriving part of it, where things actually get better because of the right steps people take to get there.
And so what are the first right steps?
Well, the first one in the thriving stage is faith. There's academic literature that shows a strong statistical correlation between faith, whether it be in God or nature or a higher power, whatever it is. That's very much statistically correlated to thriving. The next one is a connection. You've got to tell your story. You can't bottle the stuff inside. That's a classic mistake that people make that have been through trauma, is they don't want to talk about it because it's ugly and it's uncomfortable. But as we do so, we heal. There's a chapter on forgiveness. The biggest lie we're told, at least that I was told as a kid, was forgive and forget. You're not going to forget this stuff, but you do want to forgive in the sense that you don't harbor the triggering, adrenaline-driven, anger. And then resilience is a chapter where we talk about reframing, setting new goals, experimenting with things where we transform from self-medication to self-care. Self-care is a big part of it. And ultimately, we want to land. Chapter 15 is on gratitude. For example, I was born with a congenital heart defect. I had open heart surgery when I was 11 years old. And while I didn't enjoy that trauma in my childhood, today I have a tear of gratitude when I see a kid in a wheelchair. I have empathy, and that's a gift that I have from my trauma.
We're talking with Dr. Bell. It's actually Randall Bell, but the website is Dr. Bell. drbell.com. The book he has written, and I am going to say it is brilliantly, is Post-Traumatic Thriving, the Art, Science, and Stories of Resilience.
I would really emphasize what I call the dynamic
stories
duo.
In an intriguing way, as you see the initial reactions and then the follow-up reactions of these people who've learned to thrive as he has. So what would you say?
You got to come out.
What point would you like to cover in this interview, Dr. Bell, that I haven't
covered? You keep that internal battle
that we should cover
going. And the second thing is what I call grounding. It goes by different names: meditation, Lamaze, deep breathing exercises. Doesn't matter what you call it, but there's over 20 studies in my office here out of Harvard Medical School that shows that deep breathing exercises transform us. You know, in medical talk, of course, it's we're going from the parasympathetic nervous system, which is calm, and trauma takes us into sympathetic, which is stress. And so by deep breathing, it changes the roles. We flip off the switch of the stress, and we turn on the switch of calm through deep breathing exercises. And at Harvard, they actually have brain scans to prove medically and scientifically that this is the case. So I would want anyone who's been facing a trauma to really have those two tools. There's more in the book, but those are two everybody should have right off the bat to really heal from our trauma. That's what it's all about.
I want to thank you very much for coming on. This is a wonderful book, and you've heard a great summary of the two steps or the immediate steps of, I guess, enveloping yourself in it and then getting friends or other people to help share the burden with you. One of the keys, if you go way back, Dr. Bell, to the Whitehall studies in Great Britain, the key for people being resilient, that is the people in the civil service of Great Britain who dealt best with stress, was that they had a lot of friends. So faith and friends are really incredibly important. Thanks very much. I hope this book is incredibly successful. It deserves to be. DrBell.com is the other way of getting on this. Randall Bell is the author. Caitlin, thank you for great engineering. And thank our audience, those of you, 50,000 of you, who download us every week. Thanks very much. This is an exceptional book, and I think deserves to be read in advance of post-trauma so that you can thrive. But as Dr. Bell points out, almost all of us have some trauma in our life at various stages, and this is a way to help you thrive afterwards. Thanks again. We'll be back next week. This is 1047B.